These are eggs. Quick whisk, no risk, protein punch, power lunch, bake for dinner, easy winner, fed the lot, hit the spot, eggs. And why pick up more eggs when you're shopping? Because there are more ways to enjoy them. Like bacon and mushroom fried rice with poached eggs, delicious sautéed potatoes with spinach and eggs, or everyone's favourite, a simple cheese omelette for lunch. So versatile, so nourishing. And always choose eggs with a Board Bia quality mark for the highest standards verified at every stage. Eggs, crack on.
On the latest episode of Real Health with me, Carl Henry, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Ava Orsmond, chatting all things life lessons.
People often say to me when they come to my clinics, and now especially when they come to the hotel, they are like, you know, Ava, you are not the persona the TV have, made you to be. And actually, sometimes I'm thinking, my God, that's terribly sad that there is that negative. There's some people who absolutely don't like me because what they saw in television.
As ever, it's available on all podcast platforms.
Remember, you can stay up to date on the latest news with the Irish Independent WhatsApp channel.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.
Leinster finally secured a Champions Cup win over La Rochelle at the fourth time of asking after an exciting and dramatic game in France on Sunday afternoon. Unfortunately, from an Irish perspective, that was the only victory a province secured in Europe over the opening weekend. That leaves us with plenty to talk about on the latest episode of the Left Wing podcast. Will Slattery here with you, though, to be joined by Rory O'Connor and Luke Fitzgerald in studio. And Rory, you were lucky enough to get over to La Rochelle. Love to get your thoughts on the atmosphere and stuff like that. But first and foremost, it's on Leinster and finally getting that victory, you know, balancing the significance of it as an opening pool game with obviously the hurt and the baggage that came with all those defeats. You know, how do you weigh that up? How big and vital a win was it, do you think?
Did you have to spend the night in the old hot press when you got home?
Yeah, it was pretty wet, just the one time it stopped was for when we walked back into town after the game, which was a nice little moment. But yeah, the conditions were exceptionally bad. It was incredible. The significance of it, I think, like, look, doesn't get them a medal. And I think, like, they all know that. And I think you could see that. I know there was a bit of reaction, almost as much for Frawley's kick as it was for beating La Rochelle. I think they
he wasn't happy with it anyway. He was telling me before.
That was off camera.
they were almost deliberately dampening down, pardon the pun, their own celebrations to kind of go, right, we've done it. We've got this monkey off our back to a degree, but it's not redemption in terms of it being, you know, there's nothing on offer in December and they've got to play Sale this week. But I think mentally it's got to stand to them. It's surely eating them up inside that they've never beaten this team, that, you know, the way the game played out, they got ahead and the surge came. And even in the last 5 minutes when Reyes kicked to the touch, the entire stadium, apart from the 1,000 Leinster fans, stood. And it was just anticipation of, we're going to do it again. And Leinster held firm. And part of that was down to La Rochelle's own errors, but a large part was down to Leinster's kind of obstinance and their refusal to just let La Rochelle settle and to kind of, they defended very well in very difficult conditions. And I think it is an important win for them, but they've had good pool wins before. They now need to keep backing it up all the way to May, but it puts them in a really good position. They've won away, which means that they might not have to go away if they can back it up in the pools during the knockouts, and that gives them a really good run at it, whereas they've just sent La Rochelle off to Cape Town kind of needing to win, or starting, you know, La Rochelle now need results to kind of get the draw to go their way. So that's a big thing for them, and if someone else can take La Rochelle out for them, no one's going to remember that in 20 years time when they've won the title. But there's not many teams can beat Leinster. La Rochelle are one of them. Is there anyone else? I'm not sure. So by beating them, they've kind of put themselves in a really strong position for the tournament, and mentally they've solved themselves a bit of an issue, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you. Why do you think Leinster won? Like, what kind of stood out to you that maybe was missing from those other games, or just even things that kind of stood out to you in terms of the 80 minutes?
Well, the obvious thing is defensively, I thought they were pretty astute. They took chances. I thought, it's easy to say watching the game in wet conditions like that, to make sure, make them make the extra pass. Just take an extra chance, come a little bit harder off the line. you know, and I thought they were really, really good there. I thought they were pretty good at the breakdown. And I thought they kicked pretty, like, reasonably well in very difficult conditions throughout the night. Not unbelievably well. I think it wasn't going to be that kind of night. I think La Rochelle had a few shaky ones too. But they did that well and chased the kicks well, put pressure on La Rochelle. The physicality, I thought they got a little bit of... I know there was obviously the big melee on the line, and McCarthy obviously got binned, as did Dante. But I thought they just managed their emotions a little bit better than they did in the final. Now that's, you know, it's a big day out in the final, and you're blue in the face, I'm sure. Or I'm blue in the face saying this, but you're probably bored hearing me say it. I thought Leinster were way, way too overhyped last year for the final, and I thought they blew themselves out after 25 minutes. They just didn't have anything left in the tank to really give. And I thought they did that a little bit better. They managed the emotions. And the last factor, I'm going through every single factor, but the last factor, I thought James Ryan staying on the pitch was key. I thought that was the key moment in the final when he went off as well. I'm always amazed he doesn't get, like, when he didn't get picked in the World Cup, that didn't make any sense to me. I think he's still an unbelievably good player and a very important player for Leinster. And physically, he matches up. He doesn't look like a huge guy, but I think he's really developed over the last couple of years. He is extremely physical, and he looks like he loves mixing it up with Skelton, who is obviously, you know, you're never going to match him physically, but he looks like he loves to tussle with him. You see the two of them wrestling all game, and he looks like he's really up for the fight with him and loves the challenge. So I thought he was kind of really, really key to Leinster winning on the weekend.
Certainly Skelton and some of those other big ball carriers didn't seem to get the change they had in the other, you know, meetings. What do you think that was?
Well, part of it was the selection and putting Will Connors in, and it was a great call. You know, I mean,
it was really, it was left, very left field.
Dropping Josh Van der Fleer was a, like, you're talking about dropping last year's World Player of the Year, you know, and it didn't make headlines as a dropping, but I'm sure he saw it as a dropping. And, you know, he's on the bench. He's, you know, he's Ireland starting seven, and he's not picked for a big European game. And I know they could sell it that, you know, he'll probably start against Sale this weekend, but he wants to play in that game.
Do you think there's a bit of the Springboks feel about that one to you? Like, as in, well, he's going to be used a bit more. Like, it felt to me like he was not afraid to use that bench earlier. I thought that was another.
I thought it was good. Yeah, I think Natai coming on at the time, I was like, God, I'm bringing him on the wing. Obviously, Ringrose shifts out to the wing, but actually having a third centre out there made sense.
Earned him 3 points in that big charge.
You know, he was like, excellent when he came on. He really did, and I thought I've been critical of Leinster being quite conservative with their bench over the last year.
We all have. So
I think Connors and his ability to chop, and I mean the way he took Antonio's legs in the first moment of the game.
Leo Cullen had a good line. You know, they were wondering where their legs were going.
Yeah, and he was effective, and he obviously burned himself out in 50 minutes. But then you've got Josh to come on, and like when you think they've also got Scott Penny, you've got Max Deegan, they've got other options who are not getting in at all. It's so hard to get selected. And from what I understand, Connors started last week not thinking he was going to be involved at all, and then suddenly, like, it's easy for us to draw this conclusion, but there's a new sheriff in town who's got a fresh set of eyes, who's looked at all the tape of Leinster's games and has been looking at the training sessions, and you'd have to imagine that Lee Narber had a part in this selection and has gone, well, he's your best tackler, why not pick him? Mm-hmm. And it was only his second Champions Cup start in his entire career. The only other one he played in was the quarter final against Saracens.
But
he's been fit for like a while, but they've been very slow to get him back into the team party, I think, because they're incautious. But he is a very good player, and suddenly he's an option for Ireland, because if he's playing in those kind of conditions at that level against, as like it was an incredibly intense, like the level was elevated as nearly World Cup level, and he was thriving.
He was ahead of Van der Fleer though for a period. Do you remember that period?
Like he started ahead of him in that Saracens game.
Yeah,
and he started ahead of him.
He's an unbelievable player. Like I think
he started ahead of him for a while as well. He's never played an international in front of a crowd, which I think, even just from a human point of view, I'd love him to get back into Ireland so he can play in front of his family for Ireland, because he's got about 7 or 8, if not 10 caps from 2020, 21, but his injuries have come when the crowds have been back. I think he's good enough, and he was a real option for them. And yes, he was picked ahead of Van der Fleer there, and Van der Fleer actually attributes that period to why he went to a new level and ended up being the World Player of the Year. And like, what a set of options for Leinster to have. But I think in terms of the match, it was a really key selection, because he went out and took some of that momentum away from La Rochelle. But like, that first 20 minutes was
chaos. But Van der Fleer had a big impact when he came on too. Do you know what I mean? Like, I thought he was, you know, he had that key turnover as well at the end. Like, to have, The one thing I would say about the South African, you know, coaching squad, you know, the way they selected the team, they pick it as a 23. Like they really do. They are really conscious that they're going to be using 23 subs, I think, during the game. Do you know where I think sometimes we're looking at it going, because we have had sex and we're kind of going, oh, okay, if we're winning, let's get him off at 15, like with 15 to go and save him. Or, you know, if he's playing well, like, and the game is tight, we're sticking with them. So I think we have a few players in our team always. Now, we just don't have the same numbers as them. But I wonder now, will that be a change with Leinster? That was my thoughts when I looked at it. I said, geez, he's bringing these guys on early. I really like it. I thought this looks really good. It looks like a really good, I could see the decision making. Like, one of Leinster's big things is, and we always are talking, everyone who watches Leinster says the same thing, wow, the depth. But you've got to use it. You know, and you've got to use it on game day. It doesn't just, you can't just have your 15 guys or your 20 guys that you go, well, those guys can make an impact, and then have two or three other guys that I'm saying, oh, well, I don't really want to bring them on just in case. They don't have that. They have more players than I think they have been using, and they could use them a bit more in an attacking kind of way rather than a defensive way. You know, there could be a shift in mindset there. So that was, I think that's an interesting one to watch now over the course of the season.
Yeah, I generally really liked the selection when I saw it. I thought it was very proactive in terms of throwing something different at our show. I think we were texting about it before the game. You know, Ryan Baird coming in at six, John McCarthy starting at second row. Obviously, he's emerged more since the final. It might have even been interesting in the last season. I can't remember off the top of my head. But I thought they had big impacts. Obviously, McCarthy gave away a lot of penalties, but he still physically put himself about and was, you know, causing problems. And just to go back to Will Connors, and it kind of struck me when I was thinking about it, like the number seven is a bit of flux there. There's definitely opportunities. Josh van der Fleer obviously is the incumbent. As you said, he wasn't starting at the weekend. His form hasn't been as strong as it was when he claimed World Player of the Year. If you're looking around the landscape, the other options that have been tried at seven for Ireland, you know, we've seen Caelan Doris maybe wear the seven jersey, Peter O'Mahony, but there's no out and out sevens there really. So like it's ripe for someone to come in like Will Connors to re-establish some form and pretty quickly shoot up the pecking order internationally.
Yeah, absolutely. Like Penny's been in our Ireland squads, but like if Penny wants to play for Ireland, and he spoke about it recently, he needs to be in these squads, and losing out this weekend to Connors, who's been getting picked ahead of in Leinster, is a big blow to him. You know, never mind Josh being on the bench. Like just Scott Penny wants to be playing in these games because he wants to play for Ireland. So that's a blow for him. I mean, like John Hodnett's playing quite well for Munster, but I don't know if he's going to be able to get above those other players. You know, like you
he's
know,
been class.
He has been
he's
very
been
good.
Really, really good. Yeah.
Like you got Baird and you've got Tom Ahearn both going really well at six.
Tom
so that's a new profile player, you know.
There, yeah.
I think that was probably Baird's best game as a professional player on Saturday or on Sunday. I thought he was exceptional. I think the way he chases kicks, the way he hunts down every kickoff, the lack of time that he gives an opposition 10, he is such an asset for Leinster and potentially for Ireland if he can bring that to a whole new level. And if you think of who Niamh Arbour has been crucial in developing over the years, like there is a bit of Peter Steph Tata around Baird probably needs to become a bit more vicious in the Peter Steph kind of mold if he's going to go to that level. It's a
big
leap.
They don't make too many like that.
No, they don't, but like he has physically he's incredible. Yeah. And he's got a great mindset. He just needs to deliver, and he had a disappointing World Cup, but look, everything should be open. I don't believe in defined hierarchies in selection. I don't believe that a player should, just because they've got a central contract, they should be picked. If Josh van der Fleer's form dips and Will Connors is going better, or Will Connors is a better fit for La Rochelle, then a coach should pick him. Same with Craig Casey starting ahead of Murray down in Munster. You know, if you are the best man for the job that weekend, that should be the way it's selected. And I think that was a refreshing enough selection. Like, to go back to the Champions Cup final last year, Jenkins being on the bench and Maloney starting didn't make any sense to me. Maloney was playing well, but he doesn't suit La Rochelle. And I think he suits other oppositions. He could even come in against Sale this week. He's a very popular member of that squad, and Leo Cullen loves him. He's a really good line-out forward. But against Skelton, you got to have big timber. Like, McCarthy was fit. He played against Munster the previous week. They didn't pick him. They've got to get better at selecting for oppositions. They've got to be more ruthless. And it was a really big step in that direction. And having been rewarded for it, you would think that they may be more confident in doing it.
Yeah, there's two ways of thinking about that one as well, though, because I think like if you're picking Maloney as well, you're kind of saying, okay, well, we're going to try and impose our game plan on them, and we're going to try and survive in the, you know, it's the end of the season, the weather's generally a little bit better in May, June. You're kind of saying, well, we play a fast game, we think we'll be able to run those La Rochelle forwards. That hasn't really been the case against them, in fairness, but I think that's maybe where that line of thinking goes. You go, okay, look, we might give up a little bit of pressure on the scrum, but let's say on a, you know, versus a wet day, it's a dry day at the end of the year, we'll have maybe five or six less scrums. Yes, you know, there'll be lineouts, but, you know, we'll try, and if we're organised enough, maybe we nick a few and we survive at maul time. And then for the rest of the game, Maloney's distribution has come on massively in the last couple of years, and he's very, like, he's a very fit guy. So I feel like there's a bit of that going on, but I agree to, like, McCarthy now, I think it looks to me like that's, you're dead right in terms of the La Rochelle thing. Like, you have to have, you just, you can't survive with Antonio and Skelton there. You just have to have as much bulk as you have available. I just think it's the only way to survive.
John McCarthy's basically the cornerstone of the Ireland pack for the next 10 years.
Yeah,
I can't he has that tight head lock profile that Irish teams have had to buy for, and Odogbo is going to challenge him, I think, because Odogbo has that size as well. We do not produce 120 kilo locks, and suddenly we got two coming along at once, and McCarthy has all the attributes. Yes, he has to tidy up a few bits, but even the fact that he didn't take a backward step in the melee, that's kind of what you want. Yeah. You don't mind your second row getting 10
he
minutes.
He just looks
for that.
Crunchy. You know, one of those guys, you know, the people you watch in rugby matches. It's hard to, I think it's the right word. It's the sound is definitely right. But it's that crunch when he hits the contact, you know, it reminds me a bit of Brad Thorne and kind of back East both there. Like, I, you know, haven't played against those two guys. I played alongside Thorne, thank God, a few times. Like, there's a different sound when they hit the collisions. He looks a little bit like that to me, where you're kind of saying, like, you're, things move when he hits them. Do you know that kind of way? Yeah. So I have to say, I've been really pleased with as a Leinster supporter, but just even from an Irish perspective, looking at it, having him come on leaps and bounds, I think, in the last year and getting more opportunities, I think it does bode well, because I do think we need, you need to have that option there. I still think Henderson probably gets in maybe ahead of him and Byrne, but I agree. I think if against certain teams,
I'm not
I
think his presence maybe sees Byrne shift more to that six option potentially. I mean, really? Look, how often are you ever going to have them all fit at the same time? But I think, look, he's only 21, so maybe it is still the bench option for now, but I think long term you're looking at Ireland's tight head lock, because when he's beside Ryan, it frees Ryan up to make 18 tackles and be more energetic around the park, because he doesn't have to do the grunt and the scrum as much. He still
frees
to push.
Byrne
can move to six, and but you've got Baird there, and Baird is now 24. It's the start of a new cycle. But this is Ryan Baird's time now, if he can grasp it. And look, there's obviously a reason that he fell out of favour at the World Cup. He started the Grand Slam game. He was on the bench against South Africa, came on. He was probably quiet in that end game. He was dropped for the last two games and didn't play against New Zealand.
O'Mahony play was on fire.
It's a tough
back into as well. I don't necessarily look at what Ryan Baird did the World Cup and think, oh, he was out of favour.
Look, if Ryan Baird was here, Ryan Baird would say he was really disappointed. And Ryan Baird, I think, has big designs. I've talked to him, I've interviewed him. He has big designs of being like one of the best forwards in the world. So if he wants to be in that company at 24, this is both him and McCarthy. This is the time where Farrell will pivot. No, he won't pivot fully now, but also Leo Cullen has to pivot. The fact that those players have gone to La Rochelle now, you know, big starts for them, and they're getting the wins over there. That's a big moment in Joe McCarthy's career to go away against Will Skelton. I know he had Ryan helping him an awful lot. It was one of Ryan's best games for Leinster. But you know, there was a pretty seismic day for that Leinster tight five, albeit their scrum was still mullered a little bit, but they got through that.
Guys
it
the
is.
There, isn't it?
One thing I want to ask you both about, you know, co-captains, like, obviously, you know, we
switching cap.
James Ryan obviously had like his kind of back and forth with Matthew Carley in a game where like being on the right side of the ref was crucial because he was so involved. And obviously, you know,
it actually helped.
I'm just trying out co-captains generally, like, because just it was very magnified. He's like, I'm not talking to you, I'm going to talk to, you know, Gary. 13, et cetera, et cetera. It was kind of a bizarre thing when it was first announced, and it was kind of the first time we're really seeing it in action, or felt like at the weekend. What do you guys make of it? Well, you thought it would help them at the weekend?
I thought it was poor by Ryan. He looked like he was too into the, you know, he was so fired up for it. I thought that he looked like he couldn't really control his emotions, that he was on him like a rash. I think they decided they weren't going to be pushed over by anyone. You need to deal with the referee a bit better. You could tell that referee was just, I thought he missed a lot, but I thought there was an awful lot going on. He could have, I have to say, rugby is becoming almost impossible to referee, particularly in games like that. You're kind of going like, I could pick out four or five things in each ruck where I'm going, that looks illegal, that entry looks wrong. Like, everyone looked offside to me all game as well. Like, it's really, really difficult. But I would say, some of his decisions were I think he missed some big enough ones. I think like the hand off the line, it was a bad miss for Leinster. But he missed a few bad ones for Leinster too, I thought. I thought there were some fairly obvious ones.
Well, the blocking at the ruck was
yeah, that was a bad one, exactly. That was a bad miss. And even the Frawley bit outside of the clean, the long clean, it didn't look right either. That looked like it was a block as well, to be honest with you. So he did miss some kind of crucial things. But Ryan's interactions with him, you just need to manage them just a little bit better. You need to know when to back off and let him make a few decisions, even if they're not going your way. There's a bit of art to that. It's not every time I'm looking for something, and you have to know the personality too a little bit. I think he gets it over time. But having the second guy,
the two of them,
that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I'm just going to come to that point. The good thing about it was that Gary was away from the melee and quite calm, and he was able to have a way nicer kind of interaction with the referee. It almost bailed Leinster out of Ryan nearly ruining the relationship with the referee. So
every team should go with two.
But that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, is that now the new solution?
Or three or
like
four if, or five. And we can
this just, guy's wrecking my head. I'm going to go to the other guy. Like, it's a bit mad, I thought.
Well, maybe that was the design best.
Maybe.
What do you?
Well, I think maybe World Rugby just need to say, look, you can name a co-captains for the season as your ceremonial honour, but you have to name one of them as your captain on the day, and that captain on the day.
Can
referee
sure he can't go? I'm not like. Can he just decide he's not?
But he
can't.
There's two of them. If there's two of them in brackets, So I mean, yeah. Carty used it against Leinster in some ways. Although you're right, it did kind of work out in their favour. Look, I'm not sure about James Ryan as a captain, and it's no really bad reflection on him. He's a high volume second row player who's got his head in about 100 rucks in a game. He's hitting 18 tackles. He's carrying the ball so much. It's a very difficult place to then go take a breath. And then this become kind of almost that this, you know, distance yourself from what you've been doing and then go and talk to a ref. I actually think Ringrose is better. Maybe this goes against the grain because I used to feel that an outside back would struggle because they're not in the heat of it. But the way second row was gone, I just think Ryan, you could see from the first moment he was trying to dominate the ref, and Cardi's not a ref that you can dominate. I think you got to be a bit subservient to him. You got to know your players. You know, he's in the mix for this Ireland captaincy that's kind of hanging over things. I'm sure it's hanging over this for all the players who think they've got a shot at it. And Leinster have given Carly an out, but it's probably a good thing because if Ryan had gotten on his bad side, as we saw with Sexton once or twice in the early stages of his captaincy, and he could only deal with Ryan for the rest of the game, it could have really gone against Leinster. But I know Leinster actually got probably the more favourable calls away from home and against a French team over the course of the game. So it's something he's got to work on. If he's going to be the guy Leinster appoint, like he did the coin toss to you, I'm sure you saw him making definite eye contact. But he was the one sent out to do that. He was the one, you know, I think they designated him the guy who's going to talk to the refs. Gary came in and talked to us afterwards. If he's going to be the one to designate to talk to refs, he's got to get better at talking to refs. He's got to manage them better.
Because if you didn't have the out with Ringrose, I think that would have been to Leinster's detriment, because I think he might have just said, I'm not talking to you. You know what I mean? I think he might have just said, well, who else do I go to? I'm not going to, like, you've burnt the bridge here, you know?
It wasn't just Ryan, but the idea.
If the captain, after every single breakdown, in your face.
It wasn't just him either. Like, it was like.
Bulgaria was. And Dante. Like, Dante
the
was.
The entire team's. Like, it's gone to the stage now. Like, this idea that only the captain can talk to the ref is it's gone. And it's actually something rugby needs to reassert. Like, you know, just. And it's up to the refs to kind of do that. But at the moment, everyone, like, you can just pick it up all the time in the ref mic. Everyone's talking to the ref. Everyone's chirping at him. Everyone's saying offside, knock on. They're claiming everything. And it's obviously affecting the referee's relationships with the captains, but they're kind of letting it slide. And, you know, professional players are just on them all the time. It's kind of
taught to you when you're doing defensive sessions too. So you want to be taught, like, so you'd be calling out, you're taught to have the conversation on the go. Like, one of the things, you know, I remember learning as a school player coming in, the difference between playing amateur and everything is, like, professional, you are talking the whole way through. You know, you're like, I would have been annoying once I got used to it, because you're just non-stop talking to guys who are tired. But you'd be kind of giving in the information to the referee. We're onside. Make sure, you know, things you're kind of, as you're getting set. No, you would be.
Are we on, ref?
Like, it's things you're kind of, like, it's supposed to be kind of positive communication to the referee, like kind of almost positive affirmation to him that you're doing the right things. You know, am I okay here, ref? You know, all the kind of stuff that goes on throughout the game. But it's kind of morphed into something a bit more now where people seem to be kind of competing for the airspace in the referee's head by kind of, they're doing this, they're doing that. And it's, as you say, it's not just coming in from the captain anymore. And it's not just a general, you know, are we onside? Are we good? It's now like, oh, there's a knock on here. Did you see the foul play? Did you see, like, it's all this stuff kind of going on. I think it's
screaming, sir.
Screaming, yeah, yeah.
It's always, sir. It's respectful screaming, yeah. But it's screaming.
But it is. I think that they probably, we've been saying this for a while. I think it's gone a bad direction in rugby. We always used to hold ourselves to a higher account, and I think it's slipping a little bit. I think you could see that from all the games over the weekend. I think just the interactions with the referee not good enough, and I'd love to see them say, right, the next person that is kind of doing this is kind of speaking to me directly in the middle of the game, I'm going to ping you, you know. And I think that's, you know, I don't think you start at yellow cards, but you start at penalties pretty quick, I think, and then move to cards very, very quickly. They're not doing that. They need to make a point of a case out of someone, you know.
Just to finish up on Leinster La Rochelle, obviously you've been over there, chance to, you know, chat to Ron O'Gara, I'm sure, after the game. Like, what was, I kind of read the quotes, but what was his demeanour? Like, obviously he's really much, very much enjoyed lording it over Leinster. Like, how was he kind of having to taste the other side of it?
He was pretty magnanimous in what he said, and a little bit resigned to the fact that his team hadn't played well and they haven't been playing well. Look, sorry, I don't think they played badly. They were, what did he say? He said they wouldn't have stolen it if they'd won it, but the better team won on the day. So, like, it was another one of those kind of fine margins games, yeah, between those two teams, and he's got on the right side of them three times. Well, the first one was quite comprehensive in the end, but I think I would imagine, like, he was complaining about the ban and the fact that he wasn't involved, and I think if he was mic'd up and able to communicate with the players, their kicking strategy in terms of when to go for points and when to go for the corner would be more coherent. I thought they made some strange decisions in that regard. I think missing Aldred as their captain is
he's a massive loss.
Big loss to them. And I think Burgery got, again, a bit like Ryan, got sucked into the battle.
He was very amped up as well.
Like, he was.
Everyone was.
Yeah,
was
no,
proper,
they were.
Proper like, game. Yeah. Like, it was a high level. Like, that's the best level of club rugby, I think, that I've seen.
It was incredible. It was
really is an unbelievable rivalry. Like,
it's great, isn't it?
Like, yeah. And the Raj piece only adds to it again.
And the stadium, the trip, if it's an amazing place to go and watch rugby, even in the rain. It was like, the stadium's cool, it's on the outskirts of town, but it's like really compact. You're right on top of them. They've done a lovely job, but it's like the stadiums in France, like, we it takes so us about cool, 20 yeah. years to, and millions to build stadiums, and then they have these class stadiums that don't look like they cost an awful lot to make either. And the city, like the Leinster fans who were over there, had a great time. It's a great trip, and I really hope those two teams meet again this year, because the levels they got to and the spite, like the absolute spite between those two teams in the first 20 minutes was off the charts, and it meant it was such a contest. The first half felt like it lasted forever. I don't mean that in a bad way. It was just,
oh, you could watch,
I looked
it
at
it
the clock
intriguing
at 25 like, minutes. Yeah, I was like, how is it only 25 minutes gone? It was an incredible game of rugby to be at. I don't know how well it came across in terms of a TV spectacle.
It did.
Because I heard some of English podcasts today saying it wasn't a great game. I was like, that was
a crack.
Like, levels wise, it was incredible.
But I suppose if you're not Irish, maybe you didn't find it quite as engaging.
I think the kicking was a little messy, a lot of handling errors, but I thought it was down. A lot of it was like unbelievably good. Like defensive pressure. I thought the rooks, you know, Rory's word, spite, was completely right. There was lads there really trying to put, like, really trying to hurt the other guys, and the technique I thought was excellent. I mean, you look at, I mean, Bodhi, like, what a nightmare to play against. There was a few ones where he's like, he's no right to be anywhere near any of those balls. Leinster's rooking was actually very good, I thought. But yeah, geez, I thought it was.
I'm
if
just
you
trying
love
to
rugby,
think,
that was
if
a
you
brilliant
swap,
game.
Say Leinster for Saracens, and it was Saracens, La Rochelle, and everything else was the same, would we be like quite as engaged? In it? No, we wouldn't be. We probably would have still really enjoyed it. Because we really, really
well,
like
I think we
rugby,
do know that these two are clearly the two best teams in Europe.
But like, obviously, being, you know, from Ireland, involved in that, in the Irish rugby scene, like, you know, the stakes were so high. Like, could Leinster lose again?
It felt like a World Cup. It felt actually very like the Ireland South Africa game. The World Cup.
I'm only playing devil's advocate for why someone wouldn't have enjoyed
it.
Think
if this was Saracens, 6 years ago, you'd have been glued to that one.
No,
you
definitely.
You know what I mean? So I think it's probably fair to say, like, I just thought the quality on show, and you think of like Keenan at the back,
Brice
Doulan's off the charts.
Oh my God, he's so good. Wherever the ball is kicked, he's always just immediately there. And he's still low error count,
but he's tiny and he's actually very good in the air. He'd a few great high ball takes as well. I think he's kind of one of those guys in that team that maybe doesn't get the plaudits, but Jesus, like, he is a very important piece of the,
you know what's funny, because he used to play for France in the Saint-André era, and like, I never really thought much about
against him quite a few times. Good player,
in this La Rochelle era, you know. I think he won the top 14 with Cast, he won it again with Racing.
I was going to say, I played against for Cast.
Yeah, and he's had some club career. He just hasn't really, and he's got international caps, of course, but he hasn't really ever nailed it down. It's obviously a tough position to break into in France, but he's some player. But I think La Rochelle, I think they'll lose in South Africa this weekend. I don't know what team they're bringing down, but like,
I think they're bringing everyone.
The Stormers have arrested Springboks guys. like La Rochelle won't have experienced that before. Just to say that, I don't know if they will meet again because I don't know what kind of route La Rochelle will have.
They could meet early in the knockouts. Could be a quarter final or something like that. Like, I don't think the Stormers are strong this year. They're not going well either. I know they're bringing back their box, but like, you know, I think the La Rochelle are a champion team. Yeah. And
6 day turnaround to South Africa. They're well rested.
They had to get a. They got up terrible, on Monday down to Bordeaux. But fly from Bordeaux to Paris, Paris to Johannesburg, Johannesburg to Cape Town. But like O'Gara is the kind of guy who can turn that adversity around and turn it into a performance. And if they get another losing bonus points, they'll get into the knockouts. They just have to do it the hard way, but they're capable of doing it. And by April, if they get out of the pool, which you would presume
they still
will, just enough points.
They still will, I think. It's just in terms of their route. Like
they went to Dublin and won a final last year against Leinster. Like,
they've got personality.
They have bodies on deck as well, so I think they'll still be thereabouts, but look, it does make life hard for them and does mean that someone they could end up in Pretoria for a quarter final or a last 16 game, and that's a much more challenging game than say the Stormers away this weekend, you know.
Okay, so moving on, Munster, you know, disaster.
I just say that's an amazing achievement to not mention Kieran Foley. The cause celebrity. He's actually going to start this week. We've done well. No, on to Munster.
I almost said the F word there. We're not effing talking about it. What's there to talk about? He came on at half time. He'll start this weekend. We'll talk about him next week. Munster, you know, a fairly disastrous result. There's no two ways about it. Beyond probably one of the weakest teams in the tournament, generally made a raft of changes. Munster, 2 tries on the board after 20 minutes. Didn't score another try, so not only did they not get a try bonus point, they didn't even win the game. And if we're talking about, you know, points races and getting that good path, all the things I said last week, I've kind of thrown in the bin now. I don't see them going on this deep run of the tournament. They can still get out of the group, of course, but they have to win this weekend if they want to get, you know, home games and knockout stages. What did you make of the way they kind of just didn't close out the job? Because they had so many chances. It's not as if they didn't have opportunities when they were
At some point, though, I did think Bayonne's defence was outstanding. Like, there was periods where Munster looked like they were just about to make the breakthrough. But you kind of go 5 or 6 phases on and going, geez, they're actually 10 or 15 yards back. And they haven't had... They did look like their timing was a little off. You know, I think they've looked really fluid. One of the things that's really impressed me, Munster, over the last year or two is just how that attacking shape in the key, particularly, the second half of last year, obviously, but let's say the last year, I think, their attacking shape has looked really, really good. They look fluid. Does people look like they're in the right positions? I thought they just looked a little, whether they were over-eager or the shape just didn't look as good. They had some good moments, but to me, I just felt like there was a combination of them being a little bit off, timing a little bit off, and I thought Bayonne's defence was outstanding. They were so physical with them.
They really grew into the game.
They did. You know, and I know the scrum settled down, but they really were on top there for large periods. Munster ended up getting a few quick ones out, but that was a complete mess for them, you know. And that just breeds nervousness. You know, you can't give any handling area, any kick that's dropped, you're going, oh no, another scrum. So, you know, Leinster have had that feeling against La Rochelle. It's pretty awful. You see what South Africa did in the World Cup. It's such an important part of the game. So, few of those bits, I think, were probably working against them. And I think that's probably why they ended up with... I think they're probably happy in the end to get out there 17-17, I think, you know. Even though, obviously, Crowley misses the kick, the drop kick at the end.
And with Tyburn trying that one of the touch in the 5 metre line.
I wouldn't be happy. I mean, maybe...
You need to be 10 feet tall to catch that.
There's no way they're happy at the end of that game. I think the only... The excuse that's there, and they didn't take it, but it is legitimate, is how many players they were missing.
They're missing a lot.
And look, everyone's got issues after the World Cup, but like they from their tie five alone, they're missing Dave Kilcoyne, they're missing both Scannell and Barron, so their top two hookers. Ollie Yeager, their new tight head, who they've just signed, and then the three kind of scrummaging second rows they have, Snyman, Klein, and Adogbo. So Byrne is there with Witcherly, who I just don't think has kicked on in the same way. Then you've got Peter Manny missing, he's a really important player for Munster in Europe. Like Zeebo, they rested Frisch, which was a really strange call, you know.
Was
a choice. Nankle was very good, but Nankle and Frisch was a really good partnership. And when you're trying to break a team like Bayonne, I think Frisch gives you something in attack. And maybe they tried to take Bayonne on the run a little bit because they rested Nankle of Leinster. So they're trying to manage their squad and try and compete on two fronts. But that tight five becomes an issue when you come across a French team. And we saw all the Irish teams struggled in scrum at the weekend, and I think it's a big issue because you look at the caliber of props that all the French teams in particular, but even Bath, are bringing on. The Irish teams just don't have props of that caliber. Leinster's first two aside, you know, everyone was struggling this weekend, and so that's a worry. Bayonne were like, were almost like Munster in the early 2000s, and the fact that they were, it was their European debut, we probably underestimated their first ever Champions Cup game. A load of people came over to support them.
Great crowd.
They had a great connection with their crowd. Like that, that's a really rugby town.
They invented that great song, you know.
Bayonne, Bayonne.
Everyone would know the tune. I'm not going to sing it.
It's such
that great French rugby song.
If that was our first song on the podcast in 6 years.
Unbelievable. I didn't know it was called until you wrote it in the newsletter during the World Cup. I was like, that's what it's called.
I was over there for the Samoa game, Ireland played Samoa in Bayonne, and there was very few Irish fans went, so it was all locals who were at the game, and the atmosphere they created, and the stadium's cool. They've been building it and building it, and it's got real momentum. They've got to the top 14. They established themselves last season. They are a club on the rise, and they're not, look, the top 14 is their focus. I think we all expected them, and they did rotate, but they still have Machinot, who's played in the European Cup final, you know, at nine. They still had a lot of experience, you know, interspersed with some really good young players and some size as well.
Yeah,
so
the game grew on, but for Munster,
like Munster's entire brand or the European pedigree is built on Thomond, winning at Thomond. So to not get that there, they've made life really difficult for themselves, and they haven't won an away game this season. So, well, they can go back to last year and the run that they went on to win the URC, which was all away from home. This year, they haven't got the job done. And my one big concern, aside from that they should have a lot of those players back this week. And they said seven could make it, including O'Mahony, Dogbo, and a few others. Barron as well, who's captain in recent weeks. Crowley playing week on week on week on week on week on the back of a World Cup is starting to get a bit concerning to me, because he looks like he's running a little bit low on juice. And Ireland, I think the Irish are going to have to step in at some stage and go give this guy a week off. Not
playing much. He didn't play much though, Rhodes.
No,
you know?
But he's on deck, 80 in big games, and that's mentally draining as well. And like, I think he just needs, like, maybe they could have given him, maybe it's the Leinster game that he doesn't play, or one of the URC games.
It's hard because
Carberry's injured.
He's going to be playing the next two games.
But are we a little bit concerned?
Well, they might have to rest him. They might have to give him Christmas, because he's going to be starting the Six Nations. Now, there are two break weeks in January, so that gives them a window at some stage.
Not start him in the Munster home game.
Yeah,
Leinster home game.
But at some stage, every Irish national gets rested, and this is Ireland's starting ten.
I hope to God,
but he didn't
rest him for.
But he didn't start.
He didn't
play that much as a World Cup.
Yeah, but since come back, he's playing 80-80-80.
What?
Since he's come back, he's been playing 80-80.
Yeah, but
you're on deck all the time. Like, there is a mental fatigue,
but not
that does
a physical
happen.
Fatigue. So.
No, there's not. But I still think it's you're on every week. Like, there is a point where, you do want to be. You do need a week just to go right, just to reset. Even if it's just training, you're not thinking about, you know, getting ready for the game, because it's taxing. It's, like, I've obviously never played the position, but 10, from what you hear, is mentally very, very taxing. The you know, you're trying to guide the team around, you're trying to, you know, learn all the stuff really quickly, implement it with the team, make sure you know where, you know, what's happening, what calls you want to be making, where you want to be attacking them in the line out, where you want, because there's a whole, it's not just learning the plays, you got to know some of the line-out plays too, like where you want that ball, so you're interacting with, you know, Tyburn, whoever's calling it. It's mentally tactical.
I don't disagree with that.
I know you're not disagreeing.
You got 2 weeks
saying,
off after the World Cup.
He started against Glasgow and Musgrave Park. Yeah. Glasgow rotated heavily for that game. They probably could have won that game without him. So, like, there were windows. I'm not saying dropping last weekend or for Leinster necessarily. I'm just
the Glasgow one is the one. Yeah, that's the one that jumps out, or even put him on the bench
for that game. But like, and look, he's young and he wants to play. And Carberry's injured,
but they probably need him as well to like. So there is another side to where you're kind of saying, like, yes, he is their number 10, I think, now, and he pretty much is ahead of Carberry. Maybe, well, you never know.
He
all think he's probably ahead of Carberry, right? But they might play him 12 next time. Who knows what's going on there? But leaving that aside, they probably need to bed him in as their 10, and he needs time in the pocket.
I agree. He still hasn't played that much rugby.
But that's probably the thinking, is that they go, well, look, we've got to give him a block here with the team. I thought on Saturday
he didn't look as good as he did a week ago, 2 weeks ago.
I thought the team shape around him wasn't great though, Rhodes.
I'm not blaming him. I think I'm also thinking Six Nations and the fact that this is the guy who's going to start for Ireland in that 10 jersey, and is the Joey Carberry injury and the fact that Ben Healy is the one that got away means that they have to play him every week and they can't give him a break. Now, there are, as I say, there's two rest weeks, one of which will be a training week in Portugal for him. So 2 weeks with no games between now and Six Nations starting. But I do think you got to mind them a little bit, and you got to, like, you can't just keep draining the same battery. You got to charges sometimes, you know. Yeah, I know he's a young player, but mentally it's the biggest block of games he's ever had as a professional 10, and there's a little bit of element of minding him. And like Leinster have incredible resources at 10, really. I know we debate which one to play all the time, but the fact that the two of them played so well at the weekend, plus you got Prendergast there and players like Charlie Dechter, who we haven't talked about in a long time, like there is, they have options and they can rotate as they go. So I think if Carberry was there, I think we would have seen Crowley rested, and I think that's having a knock-on effect to some degree. It's not the reason they drew the game, but I would just be a little bit worried that he's gone into his reserves a little bit early in the season.
Yeah, I don't have the fixed list in front of me, so I can't rebut it and say, oh, well, they can rest him here and rest him there. But look, I take your point. Like, it's new to him playing this amount of games. I know he played in the run-in last year, but the added element of international rugby, and I think the added element of the Six Nations after Christmas, which has to be looming large for him as well.
But even in running, he was playing 12. Some of the, like Healy started, I think Healy started against Leinster, or certainly was coming on in games.
It was a bit of that, yeah.
He was shifted as well. So this is his first pick, and he needs this block, because if he's going to play for Ireland there, he does need to be playing regularly. But I just think a weekend off here and there, or not even a weekend off, a weekend on the bench, or a weekend like just where he's not.
Because you want him to play every game, because you probably want this block to be later in the season. Do you know, you have to play him. So like, so say you're going deep in the league, or you're going, you know, hopefully for them, they kind of get their act together now and they go on a bit of a run in the cup as well. You do want to have him fresh for like this, your block to use. And you go, well, we can't drop, you know, he can't take a rest week here because every week is a big game. You want that to be at the end of the season. So there's definitely something to that. But yeah, at the same time, they're probably trying to get the team used to him as well. You know, the way you've got 10 years of Johnny Sexton there. Rothburn, in fairness, has played an awful lot. They know how he plays in Leinster. So yeah, there's probably a bit of that betting in too.
They also need results.
He needs it too, by the way. He also needs the time as a professional rugby player.
But they don't have the luxury
10.
Of not playing him. Like, they don't have the option.
But it's a squad game, and Munster are pretty good at managing their squad. And then they are trying to compete on two fronts with a squad that isn't as strong as Leinster's. So, and it, like, but like, you got to trust Tony Butler to get the job done sometimes, because otherwise, what's the point in having him contracted? Like, you got to trust your players. So, again, it's the Glasgow game. It's not this week. I'm not saying like, but I think it's just, even if it's put him on the bench for that game, and if you're in trouble, you bring him on. But like, don't make him run the week for just 1 week where you can kind of give him that mental break so that he's ready for the Bayonne. Because Irish teams have traditionally been able to peak for this competition. Munster didn't peak last weekend.
Yeah, and Exeter away this weekend. Like, you know, to be fair, Exeter got a great win in Toulon against the odds, like with a very young team. But I still think that Munster, especially if some of these guys are back, I still think they have enough to go and win. They're actually underdogs at the moment, but I think they'll bounce back this weekend and win.
They do need numbers back, though, Will.
Yeah, they do.
That's
no,
it's important. It's kind of, get the five or six at least out of those seven that Rory's saying. Like, I think that, because Exeter, they're not the same team as they were, but they're still, it's still a tough place to go. I've played Sandy Park a few times. It's a tricky place to go and play. Pitch is a bit heavy. Crowd are generally pretty boisterous there. It is a good atmosphere. One of the better places in the Premiership to play, in my experience. It's still a tough, and going away in European rugby is difficult. They have their tails up after last week in Toulon.
It's funny you're talking about a tough place to go, like Slade stopped that conversion. The booing he was getting from the Toulon crowd as he lined up that. It was like touchline.
That was a great move.
Without another 10 metres, like, and he slotted it down.
I was pleased with him. Like, Exeter are a club who've done it the right way. You know, and
Slade's a cracking player as well. England should not have discarded him.
Absolutely bizarre that he doesn't. I'm a big, big Slade.
He's only 30. Like, I still think he's a cracking player.
Regardless, that is a tough fixture for Munster. I do agree. Yeah. I think if they've all the bodies on deck, they should have enough in the tank. But
we all thought the English teams wouldn't be as strong as they've proven to be. So suddenly, like, Bayonne was a gimme, and Exeter was like kind of rebuilding phase. So Munster get 9 points out of those, and then Toulon. Look, if they get a point in Toulon, they're on 10, and then they beat Northampton and score 5. But Northampton, suddenly they've got 2 from Bayonne. Suddenly Exeter are coming off the back of a great win, so that's no gimme at all. So if you might be getting 1 over there, then you go to Toulon, who probably need to win. 1 might be a good result there. Then you go into the last round of 4 points. Northampton are coming over, having won in Glasgow.
Yeah.
And this is a very different proposition to what we talked about last week when we were previewing the competition.
Well, Northampton's last two games.
But we can't complain about the fact that we have complained for years about the English teams either sending, and apparently Sale might be sending over a poor team this week, but poor teams or not being strong enough. Suddenly they're winning 6 out of 7. You got to welcome it. That's the challenge. It's a much better, one of the best rounds of European rugby we've had in years, because the French teams travelled. Like, Bordeaux were sensational on Friday, and Connacht weren't great. Well, Connacht were awful. Bayonne showed up. Like, no one expected Bayonne to show up, and suddenly it was front page in Midi Olympique yesterday. You know, that was the story of the French weekend, was Bayonne going to Holman Park and getting a draw. with a big away crowd. Like, that's what we want. You want fans mixing. It's just a pity that La Rochelle aren't coming to Leinster and the Munster don't get a chance to go to Bayonne. Toulon's not a bad trip either.
No, I agree. I thought it was a cracking opening weekend. I think five games went down to the final play. It was like, I think five away wins and then that away draw, like against the odds, which you weren't really expecting. You agree, like the Bordeaux fans travelling great numbers, the Bayonne fans travelling great numbers. Like there were a lot of Leinster fans at the La Rochelle game. I thought it was a real kind of throwback feel to it. Especially you said all the countries, well, most of them contributing, like the English looking strong again, you know. The Bulls obviously beating Saracens. You know, Saracens didn't go well, but the rest of the English teams, you know, had a good weekend. I think it bodes well, but it's funny you mentioned Sale because, like, the thought of them sending a shadow side like Gloucester did last year, like, you know, it's like two steps forward and then another step back.
But if they win three pool games and lose against Leinster, like, they're going out, going through on 14, 15 points. So, like, they're being strategic. Now, the English clubs have less games this year. They have more break weekends, so they've less need to rest players. But, you know, that they're so you would hope that they're not going to do that, but just
Price is a 25-point handicap. So obviously, some people know something.
Well, I just listened to the Rook, the Times podcast. The guy Will Keller, who was I think has been covering Sale, said that the word from Sale is that they're sending over a weekend team, and it just takes away. Like, it means Leinster sail in on 9 points and are in great nick. And look, they've had a test, and on a 6 day turnaround, it's pretty good news for them.
If
you're just trying to win the tournament, but if you bought a ticket for the RDS and you're I'm sure a lot of people have this as their Saturday night out before Christmas. It just takes away from, we've had it with Montpellier over the years, we've had it for Bath, we've had it in Northampton, Gloucester, like loads of teams have just gone, we can't beat Leinster, why would we bother? And it's so underwhelming. I'm covering that game. I am looking forward to it.
You working?
I'm commentating at it, I was thinking.
TNT Sport?
No, not TNT, sadly. No. One of our competitors. But it's a funny old one. It's that's disappointing now. I was really hoping. Yeah. I think they actually have had they've quite a good pack, you know, and then they've got Tulag in that. I thought they might have put up a big chest.
And they have La Rochelle at home. That's what I was saying about La Rochelle earlier. Like, La Rochelle are a better team than Sale, but Sale do have power and a big pack. Matchup wise, like that's the last round of pool games. Like, La Rochelle might need to win that to even qualify. It's a lot.
And like the English teams complain about like their finances and stuff. But Sale should see this as an opportunity to be top in the pool and then having a home last 16, a home last 8, and a home semi final. And that's money. And if you're complaining about not having enough money, well then...
But even like, your supporters, you see how much fun and I'm sure Bayonne supporters, Leinster support, all the
there wasn't many fans behind the goal against Stade Français for Sale anyway.
No, they're
a strange club because they are in a rugby league heartland and they don't get great crowds. But if you're going to build it, you know, like that's how you do it. And it's a pity. It will be a pity if it happens. I guess we can't prejudge it. You can be sure that... Sure, Lancaster won't be sending a dummy team over to Ulster. You can be sure that Exeter will be full whack.
That will be interesting now that they've lost. They lost at home to Harlequins. Another absolutely unbelievable game if anyone caught it. But because Stuart Lancaster was talking, he sent it on to me about putting a star on the Racing jersey. You sent it to me. I wonder where the lads were getting their info.
Someone else know? I was like, this starting. What a lot of garbage.
But obviously, they lose the first home game. It will be interesting to see what he does because traditionally that would be
a throwaway,
going to Kingspan with a weakened team. But
I don't think Racing have been.
They've been better than most.
They want to win Europe, I think. So and Lancaster, I'm sure, will have a standard that he wants to set there as well. I know the league is obviously the big thing there, but no, Racing, I think, are in the Toulouse, La Rochelle camp, I think, aren't they?
I think so.
It'd be so disappointing if they weren't because they are good to watch. That game, by the way, you touched on it, like Marcus Smith. As critical as they have been, God, he's great to watch in full flow.
In a concert arena where there's no way, like, you know, it's perfect conditions for him to go and play.
I mean, I watched a group, someone said, if all rugby matches are played in the dome, like, you know, how much more would people watch it? Like, as a complete throwaway, like, Leinster La Rochelle, like, we haven't even touched on the weather. Like, I would be so interested to know how they would have matched up in another rematch in, like, kind of moderate conditions.
I think the reason Leinster were so pleased with that is because I think those conditions do play into La Rochelle's hands to a certain extent.
To some degree, but allowed Leinster to get off the line very, very quickly. And they did, you know.
But I don't think Leinster managed the conditions well. Their handling was very poor.
But still, the try was brilliant. It's outstanding. No?
I wouldn't be critical of anyone's handling in those conditions. It was so bad. And the try was, they
try was
at the moment where composure was needed, Leinster delivered that composure. I thought Robbie Hancho's pass backwards. Harry Byrne just checking for second, just gave him the space. And actually, I thought Jimmy O'Brien's pass skipped up into Larmour's arms. It didn't. It was a really good pass. Like he did. Larmour obviously had to catch the ball, which wasn't easy, but it was much easier than I had realized at the time. It was just really
it was a 15 meter, like under pressure. Yeah. That was a serious.
Wasn't quite Ben Spencer, but it was still a very good pass.
I would have loved to have seen how they matched up in a more traditional game. You know,
it's tied either way, I think.
The weather really changed the whole complexion of it. Like, it still was an arm.
It became its own thing. Yeah, you know, and it was so different to the three other meetings.
Exactly.
That
That's my point. I still enjoyed it, but just.
I think La Rochelle's skills, like Leinster probably drill their skills a little bit harder. I think Leinster pride themselves on their skills a little bit more. La Rochelle probably rely on natural ability a bit more. I think Leinster's skill set probably held out a little bit in that weather. I think, you know, a couple of players drop balls at times for La Rochelle at key moments. I know both teams made mistakes.
The defence was excellent.
That worked out about equal, I think. There was like Frawley dropped a key one in the 22 towards the end.
Van der Vier,
I think that probably ended up very equal. But it kind of reminded me a bit of the South Africa England game in that the game took on its own kind of thing because the weather was just so unbelievably bad. I think what really stood out to me, I've seen a few videos on Instagram of like Leinster players being interviewed on there.
It was just proper,
after the game. They were being power hosed, water cannon or something after the game.
And it was coming in. I don't know how much this came across, but Frawley had the wind at his back. The rain was swirling in from the end. Where Leinster were defending in the second half, and that was a big factor as well. Like the Harry Byrne kick, I don't know how we've ended up back in this game. We were supposed to talk about the Harry Byrne kick and also the Frawley's kick, his first touch, were both into that wind, which is a tough. And like Hastelloy missed one in the second half that I think he ordinarily would have kicked. So, it was the skill execution in those conditions into that wind was really, really impressive.
Thank God the press box was covered as well.
Box was right at the back and was grand. My laptop survived.
I was going to say, he's getting it right in the face. He's
the old Tolman Park, it was a real issue. We would often have to go inside because the old press box, your laptop would just get soaked, which obviously doesn't go well with laptops.
it worked out well in the end. So we have Ulster and Connacht as well, two very disappointing defeats. Like Connacht on Friday night, it's funny going into it. And I don't look back at it and think that I was confident that they could get a good result. I don't look back and think it was misplaced. Like they had good run of form. Keane, our colleague, had a good piece on Monday about it and kind of looked back on some of the signs, potentially as warning signs. And I don't know if they were from my perspective, but why do you think they were so poor? Because it was only 12-5 at half time. So however good Bordeaux were, and they were good in that first half, it was still very much in the melting pot. And then the second half was just a complete one way,
capitulated. Look, I think, you know, mentally I would say those last minute things like that, they do take it out of you. You know, your belief, not your inability to kind of close out kind of tight encounters like that, because you put so much into, they would put a lot into that. Like a Leinster fixture is a big fixture down in Connacht. It's a big fixture, it's an inter-pro, but it's a bigger fixture for Connacht, and that would have really taken the knock the stuffing out of them a little bit, I think. And I think, you know, they still have they're still not unbelievably consistent down in Connacht, you know, and I think you're going to get a bit of that with them. I think they just don't have the resources of a Leinster where, you know, week to week, you know, if four or five of the bodies are tired and they're not up for it, or they're disappointed with the week before, they haven't been able to shelve it. You kind of get this kind of yo-yoing a little bit with Connacht. I think you're just always going to get that, just personal opinion. You know, if you look back over time, I think that's been on show too. And they're still missing a few bodies as well. It doesn't help. So, it was disappointing. I mean, it was some great rugby. There was some great rugby on show, but defensively, I just think not good enough. You know, you have to, if you do want to have consistency, one of your big bedrocks is that you're difficult to beat no matter what, and you're stingy defensively. They haven't been great there. You know, even if you think about the Leinster stuff, like they should have closed that game out with some better defense, I think, at the end as well. So Keane talked about some signs. That's a sign to me that you're going to lose. You're going to lose more often than you're going to win, I think, if the defence isn't right. It's always a big thing.
There was something off on Friday, and I wasn't there. I was watching on TV, but it came across, I think, there was something off about the whole thing. Like, the crowd didn't seem as up for it as they had been a week previously. The team didn't, the non-negotiables for Connacht is he make the sports ground a difficult place. And I don't know, has making the pitch a 4G pitch made it a bit easier to go there and as Bordeaux, and the weather wasn't great, but I think one of the assumptions we would have made is that Bordeaux might not show up in that kind of classic French way.
I didn't think they were going to pick as strong a team as they had, because you're talking about guys going week on week.
Yannick Brewer is their coach now, and McNamara is there. Yannick Brewer's Toulouse, so he's come over. He values this tournament, and Bordeaux never won anything but they're really well resourced. And look, on paper, with the resources, if you put down their budgets and the amount of internationals they have, Brno are way stronger than Connacht. Yeah, but Connacht have traditionally been able to produce in European competition at home, at least, or when big teams come to town. And it was so underwhelming. They got eviscerated by Dunnock O'Callaghan at half time. And I know Pete Wilkins has come out fighting against that today.
Well, it's funny, when I read those quotes, I thought he was someone after the game.
No, it was only
12-5 at that stage.
It was one of those half times where you're like, if this keeps going the way it's going, it's going to get out of hand. Like, it was coming. But you kind of thought there'd be a response, like that someone would say something in the dressing room, they'd come out and fight. And Bordeaux were waltzing in untouched after about 2 minutes of the second half. And you're like, it was just so
And that was the cheap try as well.
They were all, I thought the way they accepted defeat against, I thought once they lost the line out against Leinster, you knew that Leinster were going to score, even though they had loads of work to do. I think Scott Fardy has gone in there. He's a very, very unproven defence coach. That was a big appointment. I know a lot of people within Irish coaching were a bit upset about it, that this guy coming from the outside. He's got a lot of proving to do. That defence has to be better. Like Connacht, look, I think Bundy Aki's got to do better when he's playing for Connacht. I know he hasn't played since the World Cup, but he didn't really show. Hansen getting injured is a bit of a disaster.
He's a big player. So big.
Like, their big players have got to be big in those moments.
But they've got to be playing like all the time.
Yeah. But they've got to go to Saracens this week.
I would expect them to get hammered.
Well, they did last time they were there. And that was one of those days where it gets away from them. And you said they were a yo-yo club. I think it's kind of okay to yo-yo, as in be really strong at home against Bordeaux and then be weak and get away to Saracens. You can't be weak at home in front of your home crowd, because those people might not come back. You know, like that's, you know, they didn't sell out that game, which was a bit of an alarming thing. I thought, you know, Friday night, big French team coming to town. Maybe Bordeaux aren't the sell that maybe, but I think they are a coming force.
You know, you've got some serious upper,
but I guess no one thought they were going to be playing, but they were. Yeah, but I think Bordeaux are like a La Rochelle 2 or 3 years ago. They have the potential to be around the business end of this tournament. So
feels like we've talked about them like that for a while. You know, whenever their car kind of brought up, you know, when they had Ashley Cooper, you know, Madigan was there. They had some kind of big enough players at the club. You're kind of going, are they going to?
They got them semi-final during COVID.
But looking at them this year, with what they have and what they've added, and even just that tight five and the bit of meanness that they had, and their back row was pretty good as well. You know, with Toulouse probably being weakened by injury and Dupont not being around after the pool stages, with La Rochelle potentially being on the road, you know, look, I think the way is going to clear for Leinster in our minds, but like teams like Bordeaux, like probably a stretch for a Bath, maybe a Bulls. There maybe is a window for someone that we haven't seen for a while making a bit of a run at this one this year.
I think they're not at the top table for my mind yet.
No, not yet. No, but I think they're on the right trajectory.
Johan van Graan and Finn Russell, a match made in heaven, is working a dream.
It's amazing, somewhere. Isn't it? Like, I would have been dismissive of it.
Henry Arundel was linked with him as well. I was like,
now, like Ulster, we talk about yo-yo and like.
Oh, what's Ulster have been?
Well, they're not yo-yos. Yo-yos going straight down.
That's another reason.
My yo-yo is broken.
Another reason I think Lancaster will be bringing a pretty strong team over there, because he'll see this as a winnable game.
Yeah, true.
Because he's gone up and won there with Leinster, and he knows Ulster pretty well, but he knows where the weaknesses are. And
That used to be an awful place to go and play.
Yeah.
That has become, like, you look at Connacht last year, you know, like, they're not even a team that win there all the time in the big games, where you used to think, oof, like, and going again, to Ulster, you don't want to be going there in a must win. That is now an opportunity.
I'm not a big fan of Astros. I don't understand why Ulster have gone for a 4G. They've made the Ravenhill a much easier place to go for away teams, I think. I mean, obviously, they're not even playing a fast game anymore. Like,
I know, say, it cost them half a million.
But like, that's not a reason to be going and changing such a key piece of infrastructure. It was interesting, the TNT commentary said, and I hadn't picked up on this until they said it, it was Ulster's first game on grass in about 7 or 8 weeks. They played in Glasgow, they played in Connacht, they played at home. So like that was probably a factor in how they struggled against Bath, because they hadn't played in those conditions.
And the wreck
against that front row. Like, I thought that Bath's tie five was excellent. I thought Bath looked really well coached. You know, I think Lee Blackett's been a good addition. We can't dismiss Van Graan's influence. I think he's really stabilised that club. I think he's taken a lot of the things he's learned at Munster in his first head coaching job. He made mistakes. We all know the mistakes that he's made. He's gone over there. He's got a bit more of a free hand to sign a few South Africans, which he's not, you know, he wasn't allowed to do as much in Munster, although he got a few in.
He got a few in the door, right.
But like, I think he's put together a really stable club there, and they're playing, and like, whether he signed Finn Russell or whether someone else signed Finn Russell, they're finding a way of making it work. I thought they were impressive.
And look at their back row, Underhill, we all know he's a quality player, had a lot of injuries. Like Alfie Barbary comes from Wasps, you know, they went plus. He's a really good.
Well, the consolidation of the Premiership into.
Should make them a bit better.
Definitely. The players have been spread a bit more
and
around.
And then, like, they got Ollie Lawrence as well from Worcester. Like, so they really snapped up a couple of guys who were kind of in the market. And
they beat a lot of those English players have just been to a World Cup semi final are coming back probably thinking a bit better about themselves as they were.
Ben and Spencer's class as well.
Ben Spencer was a really good player. Outstanding, the pass that he delivered for that first try. And they got, like, Ulster played their way in just before half time and produced some of that rugby that we kind of got back to two seasons ago. And it was really amazing. And then their scrum gets destroyed. And, like, you're looking at Tom O'Toole as a third choice Ireland tied out prop. Stephen Kitsoff is, they're possibly the highest paid player in Ireland who they've just recruited to stabilise their scrum. I know it's not all on him, but, you know, that's a scrum getting marched back. Marty Moore is a renowned scrummager. He comes on, he gets destroyed. Tom Stewart's the fourth choice Irish hooker. He's one who'd probably be looking to elevate themselves. Herring comes on, like, they're not able to stop it. You got Henderson in the second row, scrummaging lock. Like, what is...
Is Henderson a scrummaging lock?
Yeah, I think he's seen as a scrummaging lock. Yeah, well, I mean, he's not Joe McCarthy.
He's always been to my mind, he's always like a... He works in patches in games. He's not like a Donegal O'Callaghan or a Paul O'Connell or a James Ryan, even, I think, kind of like, but even McCarthy, kind of just consistently for Klein, for example, these kind of guys. I feel like he's always been a guy who makes a big break once every 10 minutes. He's kind of an impact kind of guy. It's interesting to hear that he's considered that. I would have thought he has to be
first choice for Ireland at the moment. I think you have to have that in your locker. And he was getting picked ahead of James Ryan at the World Cup. So, you know, Paul O'Connell's pick, you know, is you would imagine having a big influence in that selection. I certainly think at Ulster level, he is the fulcrum of that pack.
If he gets a run of games, I think.
But you put
he's
that
a
tight
player
together, like Alan O'Connor's kind of their kind he's of their rock, guy. Their
he,
guy.
He, to my mind, is a guy. I'm like, okay, that guy's pushing for 80 minutes, if however long he's on the pitch.
Yeah, but so that tight five, like on paper, is a good tight five, and they're getting absolutely bullied by a bad tight five. That's it's a good Premiership tight five, but it's not an outstanding. Like, I know Will Stewart has England caps and Abano's a good player, but you're not talking about La Rochelle. Like, it's not Will Skelton and Willie Antonio. That's got to be killing Ulster. And Dan McFarland is a former prop. You know, same with Graham Rowntree. I don't understand how Ireland has a performance director who's a hooker, and they've two of the four provinces are coached by former props, and yet the four scrums were getting pushed around the place all weekend. It's got to become a bit more of a point of difference for Irish rugby. I think Irish rugby, we prize high skill, we prize the tempo the teams play at, but the you can't be going into these games without a scrum, and the scrum has to become more important if the Irish teams are going to go deep. Particularly, like, Leinster kind of got away with it. They were able to play around it, but I think Ulster, Munster and Connacht really can't be going into these games and getting pushed around at the scrum because they're less able to rise above it. So it was a big factor this weekend.
Yeah,
you know, it's 10, 11 years since that game in Twickenham where Mike Ross went off injured and Tom Cork came on and Ireland got destroyed and there was a national scrum strategy put in place and Greg Feek got that job. And, you know, there are more props around now who are Irish qualified, but they're still not at the level, apart from maybe Furlong and Porter, that certainly the players are coming up against. And, like, they don't have free reign to go out and sign a Tongan or a Fijian or a Georgian, you know, to do the job. Apart from your marquee guys like Kitsoff and Alalatoa, they've got to be homegrown, which is hard, but that should be, if that's not a major focus, it's got to become one.
Last question before we finish, quickly, Kieran Frawley, Harry Byrne, how do you think it went? I want to circle back to it. Because I know our listeners are so keen.
I thought Harry Byrne was quite good as well. Difficult conditions. Yeah. You know, I think there was... The coaching staff would feel probably justified in making that selection, given his performance.
Stuck it to you.
I don't know. I still think Frawley's a better fit at this stage. I think he's further on the journey. He had a few. He wasn't unbelievable when he came on. But I thought he's solid. I think he's a bit more physical. I think he mightn't have the same passing game as Harry Byrne. They always rave about Harry Byrne's passing game, but I think for everything else, his kicking out of hand was outstanding at different times. Like behind, from his own line, he was getting the distance, and he was
and
just
the drop
stroking
kicks
them.
As well, the dropouts and the kickoffs.
It makes a huge difference. And he did it the win behind him.
But the one with Baird was so pretty, like high hanging. Like
they
it's,
were really
it's hard
good.
To do that. You see the out half struggling with that part.
He's definitely more physical. He's more physical than the two Byrne brothers. You don't have to worry about him making his tackles. He's going to make his tackles. So I think,
He's going to start this week.
Yeah, he should. But like, look, the problem is now.
He will. Well, Harry Burns injured, so it's either him or Sam Prendergast. And you know, I think you can safely assume that Kieran Frawley's going to play. And deserves to play. Like he's earned it.
Yeah, I think. Look, he's still going to face a problem when Ross Byrne comes back.
Now, like Ross Byrne sounds like might be Six Nations, you know, beyond the Six Nations. So there's a window there. His mission and Harry Byrne's mission is to change the pecking order before Ross comes back.
But he's going to be playing. So we're obviously saying we're worried about Crowley having to play all the games. But Frawley is on the other side of the coin, where if you know this is probably a week that Harry Byrne is out. Is he going to get enough games to make it to make an impression? I would say, based on what we saw on the weekend, he has to be. He's the closest I've seen to Crowley of the other four provinces, I think. They remind me of each other. They're quite similar, I think, and even how they run and stuff. But they have a bit of a running game. I think they're a really nice fit for their provinces and for Ireland. I think those guys will make the transition a bit easier than Harry Byrne, in my opinion.
Just if he plays this weekend, and if Sale do rotate en masse and he's playing like a very mediocre Sale team and they win and Leinster hammered him, like we see them do against Gloucester last year.
What? It gets discounted, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does completely. Like, I don't think people are going
to
be
the week to start was last week.
Like, he's not.
I'll be better than what he's been
fairness,
getting.
Both of them are not new to Ireland. So Harry Byrne and Kieran Frawley have both spent extended periods within Ireland. So the coaches know them. So that's something that they have in their locker. I was just thinking, after this weekend, there's only four games till the Six Nations. So there's not actually that many minutes to impress left, because it's those two break weekends that I mentioned. There's only the two rounds of URC and then two rounds of Europe, and then we're into it. So I would, if Ross isn't available, I would think that the three out halves who'll be called up for the Six Nations are Jack Crowley, Harry Byrne, and Kieran Frawley. So
Frawley is going to be a real threat to that bench spot for if it makes sense. It looks like Crowley's there, but I think Byrne will be under serious pressure to get on that bench. I think Frawley is like your Swiss Army knife to a certain
extent. Which is where that kind of thing
that we've railed against him here.
It's a flaw, but it also gets you into squads.
Who wants to be in the squad riding the pine? To my mind, that was always I always hated that about my own career.
His window's there now. So the interesting thing is, if he does shoot the lights out this weekend, does he then see the jersey back to Harry Byrne for Thomond Park? You know, there's a big selection. Yeah. But Harry Byrne probably did enough in that 39 minutes to suggest that he merits it. And look, his passing is excellent, and he's a very good player in his own right. It's really like if you flip it and you look at, like, Johnny Sexton just retired, Leinster have never won a Heineken Cup without him, and yet now you've got four very high quality tens, I think, behind. You know, coming through, like, you know, Ross is still able to do an incredible job in that team.
Oh, Ross is a great player. Sorry,
Harry has excellent potential. Kieran Frawley looks ready to go, and then you've got Prendergast, who I think is going to take another season of development, and he's going to be dripped in and out for games, but like has the top end potential, like, that you can see. Yeah. What a position to be in! You know,
he's nuts on thread at the moment, isn't he? The poor guy. I feel for going into those conditions.
Someone from around Leinster texted me on the weekend. Hugo Rice had come off the bench. O'Gara brought on for Hastoy. He's younger than Sam Prendergast.
Yeah, he started in the 20s.
But he looks like he's filled out a bit more. Cian Prendergast looks to me like he is, you know, he looks like he's got another year and a half at least of getting into the gym.
But they've got such resources there that they can do that. They can afford. They have the luxury of, they'll drop him in maybe for Ulster on New Year's Day. He might be on the bench this weekend if they don't go 6-2, and then, you know, they'll take him out. You know, he'll get through kind of a body of work, then he comes back in when they need him.
I'd worry about him in a big one, against a real physical team. But at some point you got to get in there. And some people aren't big. You look at Carberry's not a big guy, but he's had a lot of issues off the back of that. But, you know, he still had a very good career. You know, so you can still do it, but where do you get? You need to the top level. It's pretty tricky playing that size. It's gotten worse than even when O'Gara was there. Do you know what I mean? O'Gara struggled a little bit on the physical side, but he made up for it with everything else being so good. I think it's getting harder and harder to do that in the game. That's why I think I would tilt towards a Frawley type or a Crowley type, who are very physical, I think.
Well, plenty covered on tonight's episode of Left Wing Podcast. I'd like to thank Luke and Rudd for joining me. We'll be back later in the week with a podcast recapping the team news ahead of the second round of Champions Cup action. And in the meantime, you can subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or listen on independent.ie. So until next time, thanks for listening, and goodbye.